Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Our time is now with LSU basketball.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
One way or another, we're going to make history.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
I came here to win. We're going to win immediately.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the Executive Editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the Editor, Glenn Gilbo. A packed show for you here tonight. Coming up a little bit later, LSU softball coach Beth Torino will join us to talk about their super regional matchup against Alabama. Matt Hayes from the USA Today will join us. Big week next week, SEC spring meetings in Destin. Matt will help preview that and talk about the discussion over a 24-team college football playoff. Lon Phillips Sullivan of LSU Odyssey also will join us to talk LSU football and other things. And then our good old friend Andre Champagne from 247 Sports will join us to talk football recruiting. And recruiting is where we'll start the show off tonight. Guys, how you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
We're doing well. Doing well. We'll get into some baseball talk as well, as it's possible the season comes to an end tonight or tomorrow. Or
you sound hopeful that it comes to an end, Jeff.
It needs to come to an end.
So we can recruit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It certainly would help. Let's start off on our big topic tonight. Will Wade is in the news, and he's apparently aggravating every coach in college basketball because that's...
That's what he likes to do.
He's like Tony Vitello.
He's a Tony Vitello of college basketball.
It's like if there's a rule... Then he wants to stretch that rule.
Take the gray Test area. It. Yeah. And it's funny, LSU fans love him, but Tony Vitello's the same guy, and they all hated him. It's who you're coaching for.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But what we're talking about, in case you're not aware, LSU has apparently signed the Big East Player of the Year, and that sounds like fantastic news. But R.J. Louise, who was an outstanding player for St. John's, an All-American there, where he averaged 18 points and 7 rebounds and 30 as a starter in 32 of 35 games for St. John's 2 seasons ago for Coach Rick Pitino. The problem is that he was signed by the Utah Jazz, traded to the Boston Celtics, was then sent to the Celtics G League team in Maine, but he never played in a professional game. But yet he was signed by a professional or an NBA team because he went undrafted in the 2025 NBA draft. And
He's been paid.
And
of course, that's not a big deal anymore.
College coaches.
Peanuts compared to what he'll probably be making.
Just a minor rule, according to Will Wade. Will Wade doesn't really pay attention to rules. He'll get around it. That's just a little distraction.
But this... All right, give me your guys' take.
I think they may not get him. They have a chance to get him, and Will Wade feels like he's worth taking a chance on, and I think he is too. He's a very talented player. He'd be one of the best players in the SEC. They're going to try to get him. They might. One of the things that they're going to push with a judge or with whoever they talk to try to get a ruling is the fact that he has not played, whereas the Alabama player who lost his eligibility, he did play. Now, that might not mean anything because whether he played or not, he did sign with the NBA team. But that's just one wrinkle that they're trying, and they think they have a chance. But they're not, like, thinking that they automatically got him. But they think they have a chance.
I think that they have a good chance because it'll probably be in Louisiana over there in the 19th district. judicial court, and they'll probably, you know, they'll probably get it just like Chambliss got it in Oxford or wherever outside of Oxford.
Well, I mean, LSU's got a great law school, and Baton Rouge is crawling with lawyers and judges who graduated from LSU. I'll never forget, a friend of mine told me that there's more LSU law school graduates in Baton Rouge than there are hookers in Vegas.
But no, realistically, that, you know, you talk about the fact that we're joking, but we're also serious. When's the last time the NCAA won a case like this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? Well,
why is the NCAA still around?
Well, Alabama did lose its player.
Eventually.
Right. But, I mean, he only played a couple of weeks. So I guess you could say the NCAA won that one.
Well, yeah. And the fact of the matter is, the rule is that if you sign, it's not if you play.
Yeah, right.
Now, that kid from Alabama played 82 games or something like that.
Yeah, right. That's a little different, but it might not mean anything.
Right. Well, apparently nothing means anything
that's true
anymore. But
it's worth a try. I mean, if it's the Wild West, you might as well take a try, and that's what it is. So Wade is being smart for trying to get the kid, you know, because nowadays – you know, if you try to follow the rules, you know, you lose, you know. So why follow? What, there's a gentleman's agreement among the other coaches not to go after this kid, and that's why they're mad at Wade?
Yeah, and everybody else on his roster is from Israel or from somewhere in Europe that's on the roster right now, and they've all played pro ball, but it doesn't matter. You can play pro ball over there and come play
different
college
rules.
Ball here.
Right.
Although there may be some challenges to a couple of those, from what I understand, but you can't touch the NBA players.
Well, I think with Wade, and maybe he's already done this, the first thing you do is recruit a judge. Then you recruit the player.
Does he have any attorneys on his staff? I mean,
that would be a good idea. I'm sure there's plenty of attorneys with LSU degrees in Baton Rouge who are willing to help Will Wade. He's a rock star in Baton Rouge.
So Jeff Goodman's been on a tirade today against Will Wade. He is the co-founder of the Field of 68. He got a quote from what he called a top 20 head coach, which was later identified, according to John Rothstein, as Tom Izzo, of course, the legendary coach at Michigan State. And the quote that Jeff Goodman uses, again, Goodman doesn't say who the coach is. He says, I have to take some words out of there because there's some profanity in this. You're being an idiot for the sake of being an idiot. What you're doing is screwing it up for everyone else. And John Rothstein also then added to those comments, and John Rothstein's kind of in the, but him and Will Wade are good friends. So John's getting this stuff.
He broke the story about Wade.
Yes.
Coming to LSU.
And then, Rothstein also said that Izzo remarked, Wade is one of the most useless basketball minds in the sport.
Wow. We don't know if Izzo said that, but that's what he's saying Izzo said.
That's what, according to Rothstein.
Wow.
Izzo said Wade is one of the most useless basketball minds.
Why is he upset with him?
Okay. They've been upset with him ever since his days at VCU's. They've never liked this guy.
I know, but I want to know why they're lashing out at him right now specifically.
Because he's trying to stretch the rules. Right. And that this...
Because everybody on his roster is 24, 25 years old right now?
No, I think Izzo is particularly mad about the Luis. Just that's what he's really mad about, right, Jeff?
Yeah, this was in response.
I don't think he has
an
issue with the other guys.
But, you're seeing the 24-year-old Brazilian power forward, and then you're hearing about the reports of this other guy from Israel who...
Well, that's not new, though. You got 23- and 24-year-old guys from overseas playing at other colleges.
Let's talk about the Israel kid, Yam Madar, the 25-year-old Israeli point guard. Mm-hmm. I've seen reports in the last 24 hours from reputable sources saying he's signed, and it's $5 million. And I can't locate anyone at LSU who knows anything about it.
Can I add something here? Because Jeff Goodman just tweeted this out about 10 minutes ago. I don't mean to just completely ignore what you just said, Todd.
Sounds like it, but go ahead.
Goodman is reporting that Will Wade has landed a 6 foot six wing player. I believe his name is Seliu Nyang.
We were expecting that one. Right?
22 years old, drafted by the Cavs in 2025.
Oh, yeah, we've already written about him. Yeah. Right.
He's the kid from Italy.
Right, right. He was he's being supposedly recruited and try and close to signing. So, but he's reporting that he's signed.
That is according to Jeff Goodman.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's another good player.
I'd also like to point out that I don't believe LSU has officially announced any of these signings.
But how much of their you have to make sure that's. It sounds like you have to figure out if more than half of these guys are even eligible to play.
Well, and if they're on Social Security yet.
Here's another tweet from Jeff Goodman. Will Wade is bad for college basketball right now.
And I don't understand. I'm not saying I disagree. I want them to quit throwing out these comments and talk about why they say that. And I know we can sit there and assume and project and be pretty much dead on with what we think. But I would love for them to clarify what they're talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons potentially why Will Wade's bad for college basketball. Todd's just looking for some specificity.
But it is amazing how much he gets. I mean, it's – and, you know, Illinois could go do this. A lot of other schools can go do this, and it's
– Will's only got five players, man. He's not being picky about the rules. Or about what Tom Izzo thinks the rule is.
Well, this is here's what I don't understand how we've gotten to this point. I really don't
because it's pro basketball and pro football being played under the infrastructure of public universities. That's what it's really all about.
The NCAA is governing, or it's been established, and I don't think the rules have changed to be a. Amateur sport, right? It's governing an amateur sport. And when you sign with a professional team, and I understand the definition of amateur has changed because of NIL and now revenue sharing and all that. But when you sign with a professional team, to me, whether it's in the United States, if it's in Italy, Antarctica, Korea.
I agree. You shouldn't
that's
be able
it.
To play.
You're done. To me, I mean, that's how they
fell out foreign players that were professional players to play college ball for a long time. I don't know exactly when it started, but it's been several
years.
And
how did it happen?
I don't know, but it's a classic case of when you start bending the rule a little bit, it's going to try to eat more ground up elsewhere. And that's exactly what's going on. And the fact of the matter is that, ever since the House, revenue share legislation passed and was mandated down, it weakened the NCAA's ability to govern and have rules because now you have 50 different states that are dictating the rules of the NCAA or the teams competing, and you're affecting the compensation and of generational wealth to a kid.
Well, they were getting weak long before that, too. I mean, the portal and the NIL severely weakened them because they lost every lawsuit they ever had. I mean, they've lost more lawsuits than that burger guy against Perry Mason. And this is what happens. The NCAA can't do anything.
Hamilton Burger.
Because they lose every lawsuit. I blame the lawyers for all of this. Kill all the lawyers. And my brother's a lawyer, but he's retired.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I think it's time for the NCAA to say bye-bye, or at least the SEC and the Big Ten to say bye-bye.
Well, it seems like there
then
is...
do what?
Go form their own Super League.
And who's going to run that league? Greg Sankey?
Nick Saban. Whoever.
Yeah. That's what people forget. But, let's form our own league. Well, who's going to run it?
Well, trust me, I think they've got plans.
With two commissioners that can't agree on a lot of stuff.
But it would be one commissioner because it would be a Super League.
And so Sankey's going to just retire and say, I don't want to be a part of this anymore?
I'm not dictating or predicting what the personnel look like.
The problem is you got way too many people trying to run college athletics, and they can't decide on a schedule. I mean, just look at the NFL. I probably shouldn't say this, but, well, Verge Osbury has spoken in the past about how the NFL – And it's a different comparison, but the NFL is so unified. Mm-hmm. He told us, Todd, he says, from Tuesday through Saturday, the NFL is one. One entity. On Sunday and Monday, they fight each other, but back on Tuesday, they're all together.
And that's exactly the point.
And the NFC South doesn't have its own conference, and the NFC North doesn't have its own conference with a commissioner. There's one guy, and he runs it all. And, you know, that's just the way it is, and it's organized. They know how to make decisions. They know how to make schedules. They know how to market. And it's hard for colleges to do that because there's so many teams. I understand that, but they're just so unorganized, and they all want to fight each other. You know, Sankey just wants to fight all the other commissioners, whether he's wrong or right. And I think he's being out-commissionered by Tony Petitti at the Big Ten, and has been for years.
Well, that's why I'm looking forward to hearing from Matt Hayes from the USA Today a little bit later on. We also have Coach Beth Tarina. We'll talk about things that are actually happening on the field or diamond. So stay tuned. A lot more to get to here on Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Some call it overplanning. At Boudreaux Electrical Services, we call it foresight. Be prepared for the next power outage with a Generac home standby generator. After sensing a power outage, a Generac home standby generator automatically restores your home power. Generac, it's not just a generator, it's a power move. Trust Boudreaux's Electrical Services for expert installations, proactive maintenance for home and business. Boudreaux'sElectricalServices.com for more information.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. LSU baseball in action tonight. Might be the last time we say that sentence until next February, as the Tiger season could come to an end tonight as they take on Oklahoma. So far today at the SEC tournament, how about Missouri? They're pulling off the bit of an upset, beating Ole Miss. And then it was a win for Vandy over Kentucky.
So the two worst seeded teams won.
No, Vandy was seeded higher than Kentucky.
Oh. But Kentucky led up until like the seventh inning.
Vanderbilt has a better seed than Kentucky?
Vandy went 14-16 in the SEC.
Wow, okay.
Kentucky went 13-17.
So, I was just going to say, what you see a lot in that tournament is like the teams that are doing pretty well and think they have a bid, they kind of want to get out of there. They just kind of want to have a practice, pitch a little bit, and get out of there. So you might see some lesser teams win, and that's why LSU is going to win five games over the next six days.
You know, it was interesting in that Kentucky game. Kentucky really had them throttled through, like I said, like six or seven innings, and then I guess Vanderbilt erupted for like five runs in one inning,
and they were fighting about how I think the Vanderbilt pitcher kind of tries to quick pitch him sometimes, and the Kentucky batters do all kind of like little cheers and stuff. It's like junior high in Hoover.
Well, this could, regardless of whether it happens tonight or tomorrow, this looks like this is the end of what has been a historically bad season. When we come together again next week, guys, we'll be looking ahead to the future. But any final thoughts that you want to provide on how bad this season has been?
Well, you know, I mean, it's been horrible. I think that there's been some good, you know, obviously Stephen Milam's been a bright spot. I think he's probably finishing off a career that'll be remembered as one of the best in LSU baseball history.
Great shortstop.
I think the biggest things that stand out to me when I think back on this season are just how could every pitcher on your pitching staff suck, and how could
five wins is the team leader. Wins.
Yeah. I mean, how could they all perform badly compared
no complete
to
games
to what was expected of them? And then how could you fail flatly in the transfer portal at the same time that your pitching staff just flops?
Yeah.
And to me, that's just it. And then the injuries, but the injuries are secondary.
The injuries happened after they were already bad, too.
Right.
But I looked up a stat last night because Jay Johnson had an unbelievable quote over the weekend where he said, you know, I used to always believe that if you score seven runs, 80% of the time you're going to win. And he said, we screwed that statistic up. And sure enough, they've had 11 games this year where they scored seven or more runs and lost.
Wow.
And nine of those are in the SEC. So they actually started hitting later on in
yes,
the season.
They did.
They hit well enough to be a decent team, but the pitching never got better.
Well, but because of that, because they are able to hit the ball right now, they literally could make a run. And they could.
I'm not saying they will. Pitchers.
I'm not saying they will, but they could make a run.
I really feel that this. I know there was a lot of talk about the transfer portal flops or Jay didn't have enough money. All this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that Jay didn't have enough money is
right.
Untrue.
I agree with that. I agree, and I think it started becoming too much of a lazy excuse, to be honest with you.
Sure.
By some people in the media and even some fans. Well, they're losing because he doesn't have enough money.
Yeah, that's untrue.
But I really feel the hit on your point, Jay, or to Todd, is that the pitching was just awful this season.
Right.
There's not one guy that you can look on that stat sheet and say, you know what, that guy had a pretty good season.
And it has nothing to do with the portal.
And a lot of it is just development. The pitchers struck out when it came to getting Cason Evans, William Schmidt, Cooper Williams.
Maverick Rizzi,
all these guys to the next level.
And it has nothing to do with the portal.
Exactly.
Which was another lazy excuse. Oh, well, they won the championship, so then you're bad the next year. No, the players that they were expecting to be good – based on how good they were last year, were not good this year. Cason Evans, before he got hurt, William Schmidt, Maverick Rizzi, Gavin Gidry.
And you don't have anybody on that staff right now that you can look at and say, we can depend on them next year.
Right. Yeah. And no freshman really came up as a pitcher. Usually there's at least one or two that kind of rise to the top. You had a little bit with Santiago Garcia and a little bit with Marcos Paz, but not really that much.
All right, let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Jeff Palermo back inside the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. We go to our first guest of the night, and that is LSU softball coach Beth Tarina. The Tigers will be heading up to Tuscaloosa for Memorial Day weekend. I couldn't think of a better place to be for Memorial Day weekend, but especially if you're an LSU softball fan, you're pretty ecstatic of how this team has been playing as of late, and Coach Tarina joins us now. Coach, thanks a lot for spending some time with us. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great talking with you. What was your favorite part of the weekend? Some clean softball this weekend and winning the Baton Rouge Regional. Really just three solid victories.
It really was. There were so many cool things. It'd be tough to pick just one. I did head back out to third base for a minute, and we scored four runs while I was over there. So, you know, I think I'm pretty lucky out there. But, no, it was a great weekend. I mean, the offense was incredible, just scoring runs off a really tough Virginia Tech pitching staff. And then three complete games from three different starters. I don't know if I've ever heard of something like that in the postseason. It was a really, really incredible weekend.
So, Coach, heading into Alabama, obviously they're the number one seed. You guys are very familiar with Alabama because they're in the SEC and you play against them all the time. Is it a jump up in competition this weekend, or is it just a continuation of the momentum you guys have established?
Well, they got the number one seed for a reason, right? I mean, they've had a great year. I mean, they have a really complete team this year. Their offense has been outstanding, and then they have the SEC pitcher of the year on the mound. So I mean, they do a lot of things right, but Again, it's a brand of softball that we understand, right? It's in the same league. We understand how people prepare. We understand how they compete. So I don't think our kids will be, or our team will be out of sorts at all. I think it's someplace where they can feel comfortable and, you know, they just have to go out and play their best game, but it's something they're capable of doing.
Beth, your schedule early in the season was difficult. You played at number one Tennessee and some other ranked teams. You were 7-4 at one point and then finished really strong. Did you like reap the benefits as the season went on from those highly ranked teams and opponents?
Yeah, without question. I mean, that's kind of the tale, I think, of this group is the adversity that they went through has made them really tough. And I think they're peaking at the right time, but they also can take a punch, you know, and it when you're playing against a team as talented as the ones that are still left playing this weekend, really anywhere in the country, you got to be willing to take a punch, right? It's not going to go perfectly. You're going to have to fight back when something doesn't go your way. And I think the early part of this season, the adversity they went through has made them battle tested. So they're able to do that.
This team, compared to the last couple of years of your team, seems to have more just depth and breadth. Would you say that's true? And obviously, if it is true, you built it that way intentionally.
Yeah, I do think we got a few things right with this group. I think, you know, when Bryce came and he worked with Zach, who does our data and information, they kind of have established what types of players are successful in Tiger Park. We looked for a little bit different type of athlete in the portal. What we've recruited, I mean, we're sitting on the number one recruiting class in the country coming next year, too, which is made up of a lot of these players that we feel are going to have a lot of success in Tiger Park. So the roster was built a little differently with a lot of intention. And, you know, I think it has paid off here at the end. I think we're seeing great offensive numbers. I mean, took them a minute to get going, but take out the first couple of weeks, and this is as good as an offense as we've ever had here. And then the pitching staff is doing exactly what, you know, we needed them to do. A last-minute addition of Peyton Monticelli has just proved to be a huge lift for this team, too. So I think, you know, the roster built with a ton of intention has done what we wanted it to do.
Without giving away any trade secrets, what would be the keys to coming out of Alabama victorious and headed to the to Oklahoma City again?
Well, I mean, we'll have to make all the routine things routine, right? We'll have to play out the solid brand of defense we've been playing. I think not going to be able to give their offense extra outs. I do like the fact that they have five left-handers in the lineup, and, you know, we have some pitchers that are successful against left-handers. So, I mean, I do like that for us. But the real test, I think, is just to crack the code of their pitching staff, especially Jocelyn Brisky, the pitcher of the year in the league. I mean, we just have to kind of crack the code and get on to her, make her feel our presence, and, you know, put some pressure on her. And I think that, you know, that's going to be how it really goes this weekend.
Hey, Beth, I wanted to ask you a history question a little bit. When you were at Florida International and Patrick Murphy got named the LSU coach, had LSU already talked to you, or did they come to you after Murphy left following 3 days? And just how did that all go down?
Yeah, I don't know if they made any other calls besides Patrick Murphy when it first happened. I think it
right.
was like a one and done, but I don't know if that's true, but I think it is. And then when he decided not to take the job, I made sure to take him out to dinner in the summer and thank him for the opportunity, because it's been life-changing for me and my family, that's for sure.
Wow, that's awesome. Awesome story. And this is the first SEC team you're playing in a Super, correct?
I think it is.
Right.
It's crazy to believe. I think we've been in 8 or 9 Super Regionals here in my time. And I do think this is the first SEC team, which is crazy to think with the strength of this league. And I mean, there's 9 SEC teams left playing this weekend. It's incredible to think about. So it is strange that this is our first one, but it is.
And you did not play Alabama this year. You beat them 2 out of 3 last year. How does that place rank as far as crowd noise and difficult place to play? What's it like going into that park?
Unfortunately, it's the toughest one.
Okay.
You know, I think that they do the best job. I mean, they have the best crowds. We haven't played at Oklahoma in their new stadium, so that may be comparable, but it's the toughest one. They have the largest crowds in the country, some of the loudest fans. So You know, but we understand the atmosphere. We play here at Tiger Park, and it gets loud, and, you know, people get going, and they may have more of them over there, but they don't have them the same way we do here at Tiger Park. Our fans are a little bit different, you know, so we can hang with anybody in that respect.
A little bit different, talking like Lane Kiffin, Ben.
Coach,
speaking of Lane Kiffin, he was out here playing ball on the field today, playing a little slow pitch game out here on the field today. So
all right.
Interaction with him.
That's awesome. Can he swing the bat?
He wasn't too bad, actually. I was surprised.
That's great.
Well, you know, it must be all that yoga that must keep him flexible and able to move and twitch quickly. When you talked about constructing this team for Tiger Park this year very intentionally, how does this park in Alabama compare to Tiger Park? I mean, is the team compatible to that park?
I think so. I mean, I think as far as that goes, this is a tougher park to play in, especially for an offense. Our park just plays big. You know, our winds blow certain directions. So I think probably for an offense, it lends itself a little more to their park. And again, like, our pitching staff was created to have a lot of different looks. So I think we fit in about anywhere. We got an up baller, a down baller, a left-hander, and a changeup. You know, we've kind of got all the looks. So I think our pitching staff can fit in really anywhere in the country.
Coach Tarina, good luck. Congratulations on getting back to the Super Regionals. We can't wait to see you guys play this weekend. And it's always great when LSU beats Alabama, so we're all rooting for you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
That is LSU softball coach Beth Tarina. We'll take another break. When we come back, Matt Hayes from the USA Today Network will join us here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Get growing and reading. It's May, the perfect time to fall in love with books. The East Baton Rouge Parish Library invites you to plant a seed and read from June 1st through August 18th. Visit your nearby library for exciting events, fun reading incentives, and family-friendly programs designed to inspire readers of all ages. To learn more about all the fun reading can bring, visit ebrpl.com.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me. Home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo, as we are inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Joining us now, senior national college football writer for USA Today, and also he hosts his own radio show in Jacksonville on 1010 XL. It is Matt Hayes. Matt, thanks a lot for spending some time with us tonight. How you doing? Hold on a second. I got to hit a button. Go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
Doing great. Fellas, how are you?
Hey, we're doing well. We're doing well. How significant are these SEC spring meetings coming up next week?
As big as they've ever been, I think. I think you can make a argument that they are the biggest that they've ever had there in Destin. There's a lot going on, man. A lot going on. Obviously, within the structure of the SEC, within the structure of the NCAA, the playoff, the enforcement, you know, how are they going to enforce rules? What rules are they going to have? Will the CSC have any kind of factor at all in private NIL deals, which are right now running the sport, which we all knew. All of us knew this, yet apparently they couldn't figure it out when they did it. there's a lot going on, man, a lot going on. And the 16 presidents and chancellors of that league have the ability to either take a stand and say, look, you know, I wrote this earlier. We are the 300 Persians, and we are the 300. And you're the Persian Empire coming at us, and we're not moving. and I think they've got a chance to just say no. We're not going to 24 teams. Okay, we're either staying at 12 or we're going to 16. That's it. End of story. And then it's what do the other conferences want? Do they forge ahead without them? And if they do, that would be a gigantic mistake, because notwithstanding the three straight national titles by the Big Ten, that's impressive, right? There's no doubt about that. But if you get down to brass tacks and what it's all about, the television ratings between the SEC and everyone else, it is literally like a Grand Canyon-sized chasm between them. Now, the Big Ten has the ability to make that up, I think, with becoming a better conference, and the fact that they've added Washington and Oregon and USC and UCLA. So if you get those major markets, like to a point where those teams are starting to play better, then you got a chance. But right now, I mean, right now you get Ole Miss in Kentucky or Mississippi State in Kentucky, and that's a 3, maybe 4 million people watching that game.
That's amazing,
you get,
like, Matt.
You get Illinois against Rutgers, and it's 1.2.
Yeah, and the Big Ten schools are in much bigger, larger population centers than these little towns in the SEC. But obviously, it's throughout the whole region that's watching it. But that is an amazing stat. Now, Matt, I've been to a lot of those SEC media spring meetings, and the talk going in is like, this is the biggest one ever, like you said. But sometimes, you know, the votes aren't taken or they really don't decide anything. They talk about it a lot. But, I mean, and there is going to be huge conversations. But do you think anything's going to be, you know, voted on or done that's really significant? Or is it just going to kind of set up later things?
You know, I think it's going to be more the latter than the former. But you know, like you know, you've been through these things a lot, Glenn, and the reality is this conference has always been a conference that when they agree on something, it's unanimous. It's 12-0 or it's 14-0 or it's now 16-0. And I don't think you're going to see them say, okay, we agreed on staking at 16 and it was a 10-6 vote. It's going to be a 16-0 vote, or we agreed to do whatever. It's going to be that, because they have always, you know, whether it's right or wrong or indifferent, they've always prided themselves on, look, we're doing everything together. We share all the money. It's equally. We do everything equally. And you've never heard that dissension within the troops. And now I think you're starting to see a little dissension within the troops. Like, you see Josh Heupel's talking about he wouldn't mind a 24-team playoff. Even Kirby said he wouldn't mind it. We'll see what happens when they get there. Because Steve Sarkisian, his preference is, he said, hell, I'd go back to 4. If it were up to me, I'd go back to 4. You know, the other conferences can have their mini playoffs to get your team to the Final Four. But let's just stay at 4.
Wow.
You know, he makes a very good argument about it too. So there's a lot of possibilities on the table. I guess the overarching question is, do they dig in and say, no, it's not happening? Because I think if they do, those other conferences will back down. I really believe that. Because you can't go from January backing the SEC and it's everybody against the Big Ten to 4 months later, all of a sudden now we're all against the Big Ten. Now we're all with the Big Ten, and it's against the SEC. I to me, it's really bizarre, fellas, because I don't see how these other conferences can't see what's going on. It's the same thing the Big Ten did with the Pac-12 and the ACC. When Texas and Oklahoma went to the SEC, the Big Ten panicked, and they tried to get Notre Dame and USC, and Notre Dame said no, and USC obviously came. So since it was USC, they took the other LA team, right? And then the whole idea was, before that, was, look, we've got to stop the SEC. They're going to take control of college sports. Remember, this is before they added USC. And they got the alliance. Remember that, the alliance between the ACC and the Pac-12. Less than a year later, they stab the Pac-12 in the back, take the two LA schools, the most important television properties of that conference, and left them dead. Literally left them dead. And then they died like a year and a half later, that conference. So they stabbed their partner in the back. What makes them think that now the Big Ten, 4 years later, isn't going to do exactly the same thing? If they all agree and somehow they force the SEC into a 24-team deal, what makes them think that the Big Ten, which went to an at-large, all-at-large 24-team philosophy instead of the SEC and the Big Ten getting 4 or 5 automatic bids, what makes them think that once everybody's on board and it's 24, that all of a sudden the Big Ten says, yeah, I think we're going to go back to that automatic bid thing? Like, to me, look, they've showed you who they are. Why believe them now?
How much longer do you think we'll see the SEC championship game, Matt?
I mean, until it can be proven that they can earn more money in any other situation than they earn now, I think it'll be on for as long as it has to be on. That game is not only a moneymaker.
$100 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, in the future, it could be even more. In the future, that could be a standalone game. You could literally sell that to, like, you could have your whole deal with ESPN, and you could one-off that thing with Amazon, and they, God only knows what they'd pay you for that, right? So you could do that, and as well as, it's a game, I think, and this is as big, I really do, is it's a fabric of what that league is. That league began booming because of the conference championship game.
Yeah.
It's not going to be just like a flipping, okay, we'll get rid of it. It's just not going to be like that.
Yeah, but you had, like you said earlier, you know, you got these splits, like Greg Byrne was saying, they should get rid of it, but it's not that easy. I mean, how long is the contract with ESPN for that game?
Well, it's through the end of the deal. So it's going to be, what, 2033? Is that right?
Right. And it makes so much money. I mean, I can't see them getting rid of it either. It, you know, maybe if they went to 24, you could recoup that money, but I don't know. I mean,
I don't know how you do it because we've all seen the breakdowns of what those games would have looked like the last 2 years. Who in their right mind, do you really think you're going to sell to Amazon and Netflix and forget about your regular partners? You're going to sell Syracuse. What was the one game? Syracuse versus what was it?
James
Georgia
Madison?
Tech, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was Navy against Alabama. Like, do you really think you're going to sell that game as a marquee game? Come on, man.
Matt,
it's not going to work like that. And that's another thing too. See, this is another thing that I think never gets talked about. And Sark was the guy who talked about it when I talked to him. And all anybody saw was the dopey, you know, Ole Miss basket weaving. Nobody saw what the point he really made was no one knows what goes on in that room, the college football selection committee room. They don't know how it happens. So are you going to tell me once it gets to 24 that you're not all of a sudden going to see 18, 17 or 18 Big Ten and SEC teams in that thing? Of course you are. Of course you are. And I don't think those other conferences think that. I think they think, oh, it's all at large. It'll be great. We'll all have teams in there. And they're all going to end up getting hosed by it.
Matt, we got to go. We could talk for hours with you. Very, very insightful stuff. We really appreciate it. We'll have to get you back on again. Enjoy the time over in Destin, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, fellas.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks a lot.
All right. That is Matt Hayes with the USA Today Network. We're late for a break, so let's go ahead and take it here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Yeah, tremendous stuff there with Matt Hayes from USA Today.
He was rolling, man.
He was rolling. It's just good stuff. You know, after listening to him, I'm convinced more than ever that we will not see a 2014 playoff. And one of the points that I heard,
ESPN doesn't really want a 2014 playoff.
No, they don't want a 2014 playoff. And I think what he said about don't trust the Big Ten, don't get in bed with the Big Ten because they'll stab you in the back like they did Pac-12. And he's right. He's right. How do you trust them? Just because they've won these three national championships in football, they think they can dictate now how college football is run?
They still pale in comparison to what the SEC has won.
Seven in a row at one point.
Yeah, and it's not – I mean, the SEC will be back.
And one of the points that I've heard Matt make is that if you open it up to a 2014 playoff, you have this – how many guys are on this – guys and gals on the selection committee? 10, 12, whatever it is. How are they going to watch all of these teams to determine the seeding, determine who should get in? And I understand they have to do it for college basketball, and there's a lot of automatic qualifiers, and I think it's a little bit easier. And the games are spread out.
I think Matt's point was right on, that there is no intention of doing that. It's just to pack it with more Big Ten and SEC teams if they were to do that. But I think the big point, and he didn't necessarily address this, or at least I didn't hear him address it, is that Sankey basically shot it down, said that's not happening.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
All right, let's take a break, top of the hour break, and when we come back, looking forward to hearing from Lon Phillips Sullivan from LSU Odyssey, so stay tuned for that here on Tiger Rag Radio.